At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello all, welcome to Up the Poshcast made by the fans for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Up the Poshcast. We are recording after a win, finally a win. Peterborough United have beaten Crawley Town 4-3. Another thriller, lots of goals conceded, lots of goals scored. The Peterborough United way. Tonight, we've got Ash, we've got Lods, we've got Charlie, we've got Dell, and we've got myself, John. Lods, we're going to throw straight to you. What did you make of that topsy-turvy game?
Stereotypical Peterborough United. What more can you say? We started off pretty poorly in the first 10 minutes, like the majority of games we played this season. I don't think it was a concern of mine that we'd, even if we conceded, that it would affect the overall scoreline, which obviously was proven to be the case. Scored a goal on the counter, changed the game completely. Dominated for ages. I'd say we probably dominated the whole game from then, barring perhaps a period in the second half when they came back into it. But yeah, it's just another stereotypical performance from us where we were absolutely incredible in attack and just making some really, really poor, stupid defensive errors. I'm sure we'll come on to the individual performances for both attack and defence, but I guess the main headline is James Dornelli. I mean, he's come under a lot of criticism recently, and I know there's always this argument of whether he should be starting or Sam Curtis, but I think now we have to put Katongo at right back, and maybe bring in a centre back, or play Nevitt. I don't understand why we're not playing Nevitt. I don't think he's done anything wrong. I think he'll shore up the defence. But yeah, for me, I think Dornelli, I like him. I want him to do well. But unfortunately, it wasn't his best game.
No, I do agree. And he's definitely finding it tough at the moment. And like you say, Lods, is that it is quite interesting that Nevitt is getting the protection, I think, that maybe James Dornelli needs at the moment. When you think about all of the academy products that we've come through, and Lods has provided me with the numbers, so I'm very grateful for that. When we compare first seasons and then second seasons, debut seasons in all comps, we've got Harrison Burrows 579 minutes, Ricky 239, and Dornelli 409. Then when you move into their second season, Burrows played 1,256 across the whole season. Ricky's was essentially 1,391, and Dornelli has already played, before December's even over, 1,134 minutes. And ultimately, I think it's the exposure that is the issue at the moment. He's playing too much. He's playing too often. He's not had that chance to learn from somebody in front of him as well. And it's just making it very difficult to criticize, I think, and it does feel harsh. And I think that, like we have discussed before, is that I would rather Dornelli stink out a 3 or 4 out of 10 than watch Sam Curtis put in a 5 out of 10, for example. But I think when you've got somebody like Katongo that played half the season at right back for us last season, like naturally it has to be that he comes in and plays that position, because Dornelli's having a torrid time. And it's, yes, it is his fault. Like basics yesterday for their first goal, like he swung a leg at it and then totally missed it. And then, like, obviously his head's completely dropped, hasn't it? So it does feel like maybe sometimes everybody's being a little bit harsh. And there were definitely some comments on Twitter that weren't negative, but definitely people have taken the wrong way. And the last thing that we need people to be doing is arguing over academy products, because I'm confident that James Donnelly will come good. I think that he just needs a little bit of protection and shouldn't be playing over 1,000 minutes of football so far in what is ultimately his second season at the club. So I think that it's massively important that we start to rotate and that we start to use players where they were strong for us last season.
I've got to sort of, I think, justify my result, my ratings as well for the last few weeks. Northampton, I give him a 0, although it ended up being a 1 for whatever reason. And my rating for him on for yesterday or Saturday wasn't great either. But do you know what? I do feel for him, and I'm not. It's not an agenda. Oh, your shit, this, your shit. I'm going to give you a fucking shit score just for the sake of it. I genuinely think he's been really, really fucking poor. You know, his head is obviously. You know, you could see, you could feel it in the team yesterday. So when he made that fuck up, you had Bilokovic, you had fucking Collins go over to him trying to console him. You know, you could feel within the team, within the squad, they know that he's having a tough time. Hence why they went and consoled him. Because that don't normally happen, let's be honest. So he's all over the place at the moment. And you got two options. You can either drop him and give him that sort of like breathing space to sort of regroup, get yourself together, or try and play through it. And I think in the moment we're trying to play is trying to play through it because we don't really have the other options. And I'm with you, Ash. Curtis, I'd send him back to Sheffield United. Nah, I wouldn't bother waiting till January. I would just get rid of him. And if we are going to keep playing Donnelly at right back, then we're going to need somebody stronger in the middle to support him. You know, because if you look at last season or the last few seasons when Ronnie Edwards first came in, when Burrows first came in, that like strong partner like Kent or whoever to sort of support him, to guide him, to give him the direction. At the moment, because we've got so many young defenders, there's no sort of direction, there's no support. So let's not chastise him. Let's not jump on his back because he has had a couple of shit games. And, you know, we can't beat about a bush. They were shit. You know, basic errors. His head's all over the place. His confidence is shot to pieces, as you can see. But I think we need to sort of stick by him, maybe have a break and see where we go. We're not blessed with right backs. Now, a little something we could talk about later. Who's going to replace him? You know, who could we put a right back? You could argue Katongo, but then I think he'd done very well at centre-back, so you're probably, you know, making that. Bit of a shot here. Why not De Havilland? Okay? I know he's not a right-back, okay, but he can do the defensive side of things. And, you know, I just think it would also be a way of getting him in the team. So don't fucking shoot me and all start laughing. It's an option, all right? It's an option. But anyway, so let's not sort of, like, criticise the lad too much. But my scores are justified, and that's where we are.
Oh, we are in a bit of bother, aren't we? De Havilland at right back in December. It is so over for Peterborough United if that's the solution to our defensive woes. I mean, he's bad enough defensively in midfield. I mean, it's not the strongest element of his game. Definitely not. To just stick him at right back, I mean, I don't get it. I absolutely don't get it. I mean, if you'd said something like, you know, maybe push Kyprianou back into centre-back and put Katongo out to right-back, I'd still be a bit confused, but at least that would make sense. But De Havilland at right-back is a bit of a crazy shout. And if that is the solution, and if Fergie does end up playing De Havilland at right-back, then that says a lot about James Donnelly and Sam Curtis. If those are the two right backs that we have, and we're playing Ryan De Havilland there, and we're saying that's a viable option, and that probably says that all that needs to be said about Donnelly and Curtis at the minute, they're not in a good way. I agree that Donnelly needs to be given some leeway and given some slack, and it's his first real proper season. But I mean, to put De Havilland in at right back is that's wild.
Mate, it could be wild. It may not be wild. A few years back, do you remember we had this fucking left winger who was absolutely superb, bit of a twat, had a few games playing left back and was fucking outstanding. Do you remember that? Marcus Madison? Do you remember when he'd done the left back for a few games and he played very well? So it's not as fucking mad as what you think. Sometimes these players get put into a rare position that they're not used to and actually do a job quite well. And I fucking hated Madison, as you know, but, you know, kudos to him. He done well when he played left back. That's why I'm thinking someone like De Havilland could like fill that void for the time being, you know, not the solution, but far from the solution. But I think it's an option that could potentially, you know, get us out of the mud a little bit. So it ain't as funny as what you lot think, in my opinion.
Look, we do disagree on De Havilland. That's for sure. I thought that actually he was quite strong when he came on yesterday, and he was definitely getting stuck in and making the tackles. But hell, fucking hell, to stick him at right back is fucking nuts. And I'm with Charlie. Like, that is just totally outrageous, and that's a terrible shout. Just sort of going back to Dornelli, Harley Mills came on yesterday for Jack Sparks was injured. And I think that he showed that if Dornelli can have a month out somewhere lower down the pyramid, Harley Mills came on yesterday and was fantastic. And I don't think I've seen anybody say anything bad about Harley Mills' performance yesterday. And he was also great in the Virtue Trophy game against Palace, where he scored a goal as well. So I think that that's the really important thing to sort of reiterate here, is that when we send these players out, yes, we've discussed before that it doesn't always work, but if we can get it right and get them in the right place, even just to play sort of 90 minutes every week at a poor standard, let's say. Obviously, Harley Mills went to Enfield Town, which isn't a fantastic standard, but it got him into that rhythm and got him ready to come back. And he's ultimately come on and put in a relatively decent sort of half an hour shift it was. So I do think that maybe Dornelli could benefit from that, taking out the limelight a little bit, and just given the chance to sort of not express himself, because he's a right back. And as Gary Neville says, nobody grows up wanting to be a right back, do they? But just to sort of learn a little bit more and not have that heat on him, because ultimately, when we've conceded, what, like 36 goals now this season, there's so much heat on everybody in that back four, plus the goalie at the moment, that he just needs to be taken away from it, is my personal view.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think it's, you know, no matter how Dara and Fergie try to say it, I do not believe that they were expecting Dornelli to have as big a role this season as he has. You know, Dara said that they felt he was ready. I doubt that. They probably felt he was ready to play in a couple of the Virtue games, as you said, Ash. Same with Mills, but I don't think they were ever expecting him to be our starting right back in league fixtures. And, you know, it's been tough. He's not exactly playing in a great system. You know, I think still his best performances came last season when he was playing with Ronnie and Knight, because he just looked a lot more composed, looked a lot stronger. Yeah, I just think with this shaky back four, the right back position is one that we need. We need a bit more experience in, and that, yeah, I agree. I don't think Dornelli would go as far down as Mills with a loan. I think there are a couple of sides in League Two that would maybe even take him, and certainly in the National League. But I do think maybe a development loan could be a good shout. But obviously, we might need him to keep covering, because the injuries this season have just been mental.
I don't think he needs to go out on loan at all. I think he's better than that. I think when you ship players out on loan, especially to a team like Enfield, it's probably, like you say, actually, the rhythm of things and maybe a little bit of professionalism. I don't think any of our defenders are unprofessional. I don't think any of them are not putting in the effort. I think they've all got huge potential. I know McAntony said on his podcast about he can see them all playing at a higher level. And I agree with him personally. I think it's Oscar Vollin's first season in England. It's going to take him a while to get used to English football. Manny Fernandez has definitely come on leaps and bounds in the last year. Before that, yeah, fair enough. There would have been question marks, but this season especially, you can see there's something there. James Dornelli's very young. He's got very high potential and he is professional. I mean, he didn't play badly against Northampton, I didn't think. He did well to create the goal. It might not have been registered as an official assist, but he was there. He got the pass in the box. But he was straight in the gym on the day off. He put on his Instagram. He had a personal trainer. He was back in the gym using his day off wisely. Jack Sparks, he's won League One before. He could easily cut it in the Championship in the right system. They're all young players. They're all putting in the effort. I don't know why you're all pulling confused faces for. They all could, all of them. They're all young. You have to remember this. They're all young. 5 years at playing consistently, they will get there, all of them. If they carry on putting in the effort, if they carry on showing their professionalism, which they are, we just have to have the patience. And if you want to point fingers in a direction of blame, it's the recruitment policy for trusting that putting in a back line of this age and inexperience all at the same time was going to get us into the playoffs in a League One season. That's clearly the issue. If we had an experienced head in there, it would have been a different kettle of fish. Can you imagine if Peter Chiosa was our right back this season and JD was just filling in from the bench and learning from Peter Chiosa? This season would have gone completely different. And that's irrelevant to the other three spots in defence who would have played.
Well, I'll be honest, I feel like I'm going fucking mental listening tonight because I've heard De Havilland at right back, Jack Sparks can play in the Championship, and so can every single one of our defenders. And I feel like I've honestly, it's like someone's just planted me and no one's watched Peterborough on this podcast. How can we say Jack Sparks can play Championship football after what we've seen this season, by the way, lads? He's 24. Like, what? How much development does he have? He doesn't even look like he could play League Two for most of what he's served up this season. So let's not. We've got the one of the worst defenses in the Football League. I can kind of get it with Manny in the sense that he's 6'6", and if he cuts out the errors, maybe you could see him going upwards. But there's not that many Peterborough United defenders that have gone on to excel in the Championship or above, and all of them that have and have been capable of doing that have stood out brilliantly in. You know, in the team, Ryan Bennett, for instance, even Ronnie Edwards can't get a game at the minute, who looked great for us. Josh Knight has struggled in the Championship. So these are defenders that are, you know, have looked good at Posh, but they've not really candled to step up. So I really don't think we can start saying this defence that have leaked goals all season is capable of playing in the next level. I mean, I could put Charlie in defence and he's 17. But just because he's young doesn't mean that he could play at the level above. He's not going to be good enough to play at that level. And what we've seen on the pitch this season, it's very hard to dispute that they're good enough to play at the level. So, you know, some of the claims tonight have just been a little bit wild for me. I think we've got to see what we can see with our eyes. And I think you're just being way too generous on them, lads, to be honest.
No, you've got to think, right? 24 isn't old. 24, you've still got 10 years of your career. You're telling me that in those 10 years, Jack Sparks isn't going to play a single Championship minute. He's the first one in training every day, according to the other players. He's clearly a very, very high professional, and he won the league with Portsmouth. He's not a bad player. It's the team he's playing in right now, and maybe there's a system issue as well. And yes, he makes mistakes, but I think most 24-year-olds playing in League One make mistakes. I honestly think that even Jack Sparks can go on and play at a higher level.
I just want to add to Jack Sparks, right? He fucking is infuriating the shit out of me, all right? Okay, he's 24, whatever, and he could be half decent, but I've not seen enough of him to say he's a good player for us. Northampton, in particular, and yesterday, whenever he's got the ball on the left-hand side and he's trying to put it down, you know, put it down the top, he's fucking kicking it out of play. How hard is it to kick the ball straight, you know, in play? There's a fucking white line right next to him. It's not even far away. Keep it inside that. Okay. I'm not convinced that he knows how to kick a ball. And if you say that he's a first player that goes in for training every day, maybe he needs to go in even fucking earlier and learn how to kick a ball straight, because he is frustrating me. He's got no excuse. Donnelly has got an excuse. Okay. He's only, as you said, he's only played a few games, etc. Sparks should know better, and he should know how to kick a fucking ball. So anyway, fucking Sparks is shit. I'm moving on.
Yeah, look, just to sort of finish on the defence, I was fortunate enough to spend the afternoon in the sponsors lounge yesterday with my mum and her partner, Big Up Prime Vehicle Sales. And somebody asked a question of Fergie, which I then followed up with a sort of second question. But he ultimately has said, Fergie said, is that their recruitment discussion that they had with Dara on Thursday was that they need some experience at the back. The players have asked for it. I think that we can all see that they need some assistance. Obviously, I assume that the experience at the back was meant to be Jed, but he doesn't look like he's going to be getting in. And equally, it's a tough position to be. Like we've discussed about your goalkeeper not being your captain, how can your experienced player be all the way at the back of the pitch and help the team? You need somebody that's in an active role within the pitch and able to move around. So I did then sort of probe the question as to whether that frustrated Fergie, that it's not quite gone right. And he said that he wasn't frustrated by it, but that just sometimes that he wants to listen to the players, and ultimately the players have asked for it, which, you know, that disappoints me, because it sort of makes me feel like maybe they don't have the confidence in themselves. And we're always told that they're a really confident bunch, and I don't want them to sort of be, you know, bashing each other and knocking heads against each other, trying to figure out what's wrong. But, you know, maybe the solution is that we do get an experienced defender. And ultimately, when we talk about this experience, I don't think it doesn't need to be a 32, 33 year old. It just needs to be somebody that's 26, 27. But where are we going to find that from? I'm not sure what avenues there are open to us at the moment.
Yeah, I'll be honest, Ash. I feel like I'm disagreeing with everything that everyone's saying at the minute, but I don't understand where the disappointment with that attitude would come from, really. I actually think it's quite a... If they're spotting a problem and they're saying, look, we are really struggling here, and they've gone to the manager and said, we need some help, you know, well, I might lose my spot, but for the benefit of the team, we need some help. And what's going to help me develop as a player is an experienced head. I think that's a really mature attitude to have. I think it's clear from the sidelines that potentially someone with League One experience could benefit us. We look naive in the way we defend. So if the players want that and they actively think that can help them, I don't see any disappointment with that. Actually, I think it should be actively encouraged. For me, what would be more concerning is if they were like, no, we're going to play, and they felt that, but they just wanted to keep their own spot. I think as a team mentality, that's a way better way to approach things. What I do agree with you on is I don't want a cumbersome 32-year-old like, I don't know, like a Mark Beavers to come in, or a Kelvin Langmead or someone like that. I would like to see us go and get somebody with maybe a couple of seasons of League One, that's sort of 25, 26, almost like an Archie Collins signing, that can come in and marshal that defence. I do think we need a little bit more leadership, but it doesn't seem like the most vocal of teams. We don't have a particularly expressive team. It's only sort of Mothersill that you ever really see going to the crowd and getting them up. We don't have that Chioso type figure anymore. So I'd like someone like that, that puts his body on the line, that's brave, that can command the troops. Look, they're going to be expensive, probably, but if there's one position we need to invest in, I think it is clearly the defence. So, you know, whatever budget we've got in January, let's just throw it at that player, especially if the players want him.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do disagree with you, John, because quite frankly, if we've got a back four or a back five or whoever it is that's clamouring for an experienced defender that has basically given up on their own ability to defend. And I mean, defending in principle is not that hard. Like, it's very much, you have to make a mistake most of the time to concede a goal. Most of the goals that we concede come from our defenders making mistakes. And so if we've got a group of five people that go for an hour and a half each week, I'm not capable of not making a mistake that is going to massively impact my football team, then I think that's a problem. And we also have to realise that we have four games minimum, probably five or six, before we get any defensive reinforcements in. Have the defence just accepted then that for the next five or six games, they're just going to absolutely stink up the gaff and just continue to allow the attack to be let down by, you know, scoring four goals and only winning by one goal and it seeming really dodgy? I think the defence calling for experience is an absolute waving of the white flag. I think it's embarrassing. If I was one of the defenders, I'd hate Fergie going out and saying that that's the case. I mean, this is probably something that they've said in private meetings. I think it's pathetic. I think, you know, they're paid enough to be good defenders. They've had enough training. I don't know what they're waiting for. I don't know why they think having a 30-year-old or a 28-year-old stood next to them is going to make them any better. But no, I think it's pretty poor form from anybody who's asked from the playing side for more experience, even though I do think we need it.
Well, there's some divided opinions on that one then. We'll move on from the defence now, because I feel like we talk about the defence a lot, which is understandable given the way our season's gone. But we do need to talk about the attack as well. We scored another four goals. We are on fire going forward, and we remain on fire going forward, with the exception of the Burton game. One player I really enjoyed watching, again, actually, was Kean Hayes. And I don't think you can understate the amount of credit that he deserves. He's had to step in to a difficult role, let's face it, to come in and replace, like Fergie said, the best player in League One. But he's done a brilliant job of it. And what I've really enjoyed watching is he's just been fearless running with the ball. Give me that from my wingers. I've praised Mothersfield for it recently. Give me that from Kean Hayes. Keep going. Get yourself up. Keep going. You can make mistakes. I don't mind it. I love wingers that commit defenders. I absolutely love them. And his first goal, actually, I thought, showed that he'd learned already from his Northampton performance, where he was getting into the box and he seemed a little bit hesitant. Sometimes he'd lay it off and shirk the responsibility maybe of having that shot. His confidence has grown. He takes his goal brilliantly. You know, takes that step inside the second defender, sets it up, finishes in the corner. Brilliant. I thought it was a brilliant display. Kean Hayes, actually, I don't think has put a foot wrong in a Posh shirt just yet. I think he's really, really done well. Whenever he's been given an opportunity, I've enjoyed his performances, in the sense that he always gives his all. And now he's adding some real quality to that. And I really hope he can keep this going, because I really do enjoy watching him. He's a player that I really like, actually. And he's shown a lot of promise, considering how early on in his Posh career it is. I hope we've signed another really, really bright attacker that can go on to be another star for us.
No, I do agree. And I think that the thing, like we discussed before, is that Kean Hayes just seems like a really nice guy, really down to earth, and really happy to have sort of spent, obviously, the last sort of, let's say, 3 months on the bench behind Poku, and ultimately learning. Where we talk about all of the frustrations that we have of players being chucked in too early, he's had a great 3 months being able to sit and watch Poku and learn what Darren Ferguson expects from that right wing role. And it's now coming and showing its fruits. Yes, it's unfortunate that Poku has got injured, but obviously a massive concern when it was announced that he's out for 3 months. But how brilliant is it that Kean Hayes has just been able to sort of grab that mantle and step in? And then, like Dell says, when you go to the other side, Malik Mothersill again with another fantastic performance. It's like it's an assist and then like a semi-assist, I would probably say, for Kyprianou's goal. Maybe stitched up by the club a little bit with that clip that went out with the Ballon d'Or clip. That totally did not need to go out. And like there was just no need for it. Yes, he said it, but that was always going to go wrong. And that was just inevitable that it was going to rattle so many people. And it wasn't needed. But the pressure's on him now, because you can't come out and say something like that and then not deliver. People are waiting for his failure. And don't get me wrong, I really hope that he doesn't. I really hope that he kicks on. But unfortunately, when you say things like that, you have people waiting for your downfall and waiting for the mistakes. So I really hope that he doesn't have those like generational stinkers for the rest of the season. And ultimately, I'm relatively sure that he is in his last year now. And he's somebody that I think that we need to be tying down into a longer term contract. And I hope that that's something that DMAT's looking into, because he's somebody that I want in my team for the second half of the season. He's somebody that I want in my team in my team next season as well. So you know, it was a great performance from certainly three of the front four. My only frustration probably yesterday was with Joel Randall, and he went back to the guy that just looked afraid to shoot and looked like he wanted to try and move the ball every time he got it in the box. There was a few layoffs from Ricky. There was a few from Kean Hayes, and then a few from Malik, where he just was pussyfooting around it and you're just screaming at him to hit the ball and hit the back of the net. And I said, as I was leaving yesterday, it felt like we could have scored 10 and we probably should have scored 10, but we may have conceded 9. But like we said, like that's entertaining. That's what you're getting your money's worth. So if we're going to score 10 every week and concede 9, then so be it. That's just the way that the cookie crumbles this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll talk about Malik. I often do. It's an interesting one, because I actually really like him as a footballer. In terms of what I want from my players, he's got a lot of things I like. I like it when he amps up the crowd. I like that he tries to get, you know, the atmosphere involved in the game. I think that's a very admirable trait from a player, to show sort of passion and engagement with the fan base. And I also actually... really like, you know, his play style. I think he's fantastic. I think he takes players on. I think he's unselfish enough for it not to be a problem. But he's selfish enough to score fantastic goals and have fantastic assists like he did on Saturday. My issue with Malik always just comes down to, though, it's just this hubris he has about him. It's frustrating because when the club, yeah, they really didn't help, as Ash said. Putting out that Ballon d'Or clip was so stupid because you've got people like me who have touched on Malik's attitude before and said that, you know, he needs to start realizing that he's a League One footballer and start living in the now rather than thinking about, you know, the documentary that's going to be made about him in 20 years' time. I think that stuff like that just doesn't help him, because then when he puts in a bad performance, it's like, you know, he's not living up to his own standards. And then the fan base hold him accountable for that, because, you know, it's really of his own doing. You know, when he comes out and when he challenges fans directly, you know, he did the same to me. You know, he did it after Cambridge, you know, came out and replied to a tweet, which I was complimenting him in with a laughing emoji. And it's like, okay, cool. You can come out and be the big guy now. But then we lose 3 on the trot and he's been relatively ineffectual. And it's like, oh God, here we go again. So he just needs to... I feel like a good football team and a good football player doesn't get too high in the good times and doesn't get too low in the bad times. And he gets way too high in the good times and then sort of lives in denial of the bad times. And that sort of concerns me a bit about him. I like him as a footballer, but his attitude, I'm still very much not convinced on.
So, I mean, I listened to Malik's podcast with the club and I thought I actually came across really well on there. I don't have any sort of qualms with him bigging himself up. If he wants to believe he can win the Ballon d'Or, let him. It's a good thing. And Charlie, actually, you're coming across really hypocritical tonight because you've just criticised the defence for saying they're not good enough because they want somebody else in. But now someone's backing themselves and you're criticising that as well. So what do you want from your players, Charlie, exactly?
So this is what I mean by, I think, you know, if you listen to what I just said, stay in the middle. You know, the defense get way too low when it's going wrong. They're on the other end of the spectrum. Malik gets way too high when it's going well. And that graph, it's the same with the team. It's like up and down, like a roller coaster of emotions all season. You know, when we win, we're the best team in the world. When we lose, you know, we're getting relegated and it's over. And what I need from Malik and what I want from the defence as well is for them to just stay in and around that middle. Yes, you can be proud when you're playing well. And yes, you can be disappointed, you know, when you concede an 100th minute loser away at Bolton. That's OK. But you need to stay close to that centre, because otherwise you just end up, you know, being ridiculously inconsistent, way too emotional. And the big games and the pressure of the big games gets to you. So if you could take the humble nature of the defence, that is, you know, we need help. And you take the ego and the confidence of Malik, which is, you know, I'm a good player. I back myself against anyone. And you sort of average that out. Yeah, I think you've got a very good mentality. But I think both ways just swing a little bit too far.
So basically what you want is just a boring media trained footballer who has no personality about themselves and just goes about their football and stays quiet and we never hear from. It's just boring. Give me a bit of personality. I'm all for it. If Malik wants to use that as his motivation, use it as your motivation. I'd much rather somebody does that than have no ambition in life. Why not shoot for the stars? And if you fall just short, you land on the moon. That's what they always say. Keep doing it, Malik. You're playing really well this season. Don't be a boring media trained footballer that Charlie wants, a robot that has no emotion. No one wants that.
Well, I'd say we had 11 robots with very little emotion last season and it was pretty good.
I have to say, I love Malik Mothersill and I think my love for him has only come fairly recently. And I urge anyone listening to this right now, if you're unsure on Malik Mothersill, subscribe to Posh Plus, watch his Day in the Life of, and make sure you listen to the podcast he was on, because John is absolutely right. It is his personality. He believes in himself. He backs himself. The Ballon d'Or, just ignore it as a throwaway comment. That's his goal. That's his overall achievement that he wants to achieve in his career. Doesn't mean that he actually thinks he's going to get there. He just has to say that because that's what he wants to do. And I would much prefer all of our people in our squad to set themselves goals that high. And actually, I can't remember if it was the podcast, I think he said it in, where he, the day before he signed for us, he had pretty much agreed to join a different Premier League team. And he turned up to Posh in their tracksuit. They didn't name the Premier League team. But the way he was talking about us, it was a no-brainer that he wanted to come to Peterborough United. And that was because of the work we do on our strikers in particular. He knew in his head that Peterborough United was the place to go to get your career on and to get the big move. And that's the reason why he's here. One thing that Ashley said that I want to just quickly touch on, his contract does expire this summer. I don't know if we have the year extension or not, but I feel like it's gone under the radar. And I was quite surprised to see that he had bought a house in the area, which says to me that he quite likes it here and he wants to stay. And he feels like he's got at least another season in him. So I do think that we should probably address the contract issue here. Make sure that we don't let him go on a free, because he might not win the Ballon d'Or, but I can see him playing in the Premier League in 5 years' time. And I wouldn't want to see that happen with us not getting a penny from it.
No, I do agree. And I just wanted to go back to Charlie sort of saying that Malik's not humble. I think that's really harsh. The bloke's moved his family up to Peterborough to live with him. Like, an unhumble bloke says, right, I'm going to live on my own. I'm going to have a lot of girls around every night. But he's got his mum and dad living at home with him. Like, how can you say that he's not humble? Like, sometimes it just seems like a little bit of a vendetta. And when we talk about media trained last year, Harrison Burrows was the biggest shithouse that we've had in the last sort of 5 years. You can't say that they're all media trained and boring. Like, that's what we've got. And Ephraim Mason, you have to have an ego. The players that have egos and back themselves are the ones that get the moves out of Peterborough, because they back themselves year in, year out, to develop themselves and become good enough and get a move. Malik will get a move from Peterborough United, and it will be up the leagues. It will not be down the leagues. But like Lod says, the concerning thing now has to be getting him tied down so that we don't lose him at the end of the season on a free.
I mean, yeah, I'll respond to that. First of all, I don't think humble is not living on your own and having girls over every night. I think that's a very different type of behaviour. What I mean by humble is about his personal ego. And undeniable, whether it's, you know, a deep felt ego or something he puts on as sort of a front, he does portray himself as an egotistical guy. He edits montages of himself and sticks them on TikTok. He calls out fans. He says, speak on my name. He shushes his own fans. He's not a humble guy. He's not a quiet guy. And when I spoke about last season's team, and you mentioned Harrison Burrows there, yes, Harrison Burrows always, he was a shithouse, but he was a shithouse to opposition fans. And it feels like Malik sometimes targets his own fans more than opposition fans. And I do like Malik, and I do think he's a good player. And I do think, you know, if he can start performing consistently, then he will do very well. And I actually don't have a vendetta against him. And, you know, when I'm in the ground, maybe I do when I talk on here, slightly embellish my feelings about him because it's a podcast. But when I'm in the ground, he has my full support. I roar him on. I celebrate when he scores. I like it when he amps up the crowd. I roar him on as much as I do any other player. And yeah, that's all I've got to say on the matter.
Well, moving to matters off the field now. Obviously, the big news this week is that Peterborough United have a new club shop, or a new mega store, as it's being known by, I think Dara has coined it, the mega store. Really, really impressive from the off. I haven't actually visited it yet, but I think it's a great piece of design and it looks really, really good. A couple of the members of the podcast have visited. So, Dale, give us some thoughts on the club shop that you've seen.
Okay, so overall, I actually thought it was quite impressive, to be fair. Lots more, lots more stock in there, lots of different ranges. Did notice some golf balls and some golf tees for you golfers, which is good. Overall, I actually thought it was, it's nicely done. I think it looks a little bit dark, but it's nicely done. And what I also did like is you had a couple of new old replica shirts. What they should have, though, is I think we should try and look at getting more retro stuff in. Do you know what I mean? But no, I actually thought it was really, really good. clearly it's better than the old one, but it does need to be a little bit lighter up, in my opinion, because it just looked a little bit dark, a little bit too, I don't know. If that's the look that I was trying to get, then they've succeeded. But for me, you can't see very well, it needed to be a bit brighter. But no, it's really good. It's well stocked, well laid out, and I ain't going to be negative about the shop, apart from I just don't think we needed it. But anyway, it is good.
Yeah, I've not managed to go in there. I wanted to go on Saturday, but it was a little bit too busy, so I thought I'd leave it for this weekend. But there is a lot of comments about whether we need it or not, and at the moment we probably don't, but I don't think that's the point. I think the point is that we want to make those strides now so that we can, in the future, just, you know, slot into being that established championship side that we want to be, from the pitch to off the pitch. There's certain things that the club do that I think is a Premier League standard. Joe Dent, for example, I think he's an elite level photographer in this country. I think our mascot is probably one of the best in the country. And I honestly think that this club shop, looking at the videos and the pictures, I think they're also going to be, the club shop is also going to be one of the best in the country. I know there's probably a lot of people that are involved, but it doesn't surprise me to see that Alex Harris is the one behind sorting out the club shop. It seems like everything that he does is at an elite level. So I'd like to throw him into the mix of having sort of that Premier League standard off the pitch staff member. I know Ashley's probably dealt with Alex a lot more than what I have. But for anyone that doesn't know, all the sponsorships that we seem to keep signing on a weekly basis have all come from him. And I can imagine that a lot of our income has also come from those sponsorships.
Yeah, do you know what? It is a really, really good club shop. And I think that Del's showing his age and sort of his merchandising if he thinks that the vibe that they've got in there isn't exactly what's going to sell things. But when you walk in, when you think about the old club shop, you walk in and you were greeted by a dodgy little corner with the third shirt in, a wall of home shirts and a wall of away shirts, and then everything else just sort of chucked on the floor. That is not how people shop. And I did discuss it with Alex, and there was essentially a whole new wall of 60 new lines, and they were all merchandised, and it was very inviting for everybody to go in. And I think that that is the one big thing from this. And to say that we don't need it, ultimately, every time that a fan, a young fan and their family come to the ground, that's an opportunity to sell something. And when you've only got shoddy, not shoddy shirts, that's unfair, but you've got shirts on the wall and kits on the wall, and every time that they come, if they come three or four times a season and you can't rotate that stock, you've lost the chance to sell something. And I think that what the shop has now is it is an environment, and it's a place that people will want to be. If you ask me whether I ever went in the shop before a game, I wouldn't, because it's small, congested, it was hot. You go in and you're wearing all like your winter clothes, and then you're just cramped in there. Whereas now it's spacious, there's plenty of stock, there's all these new lines, which people want to buy. And like Del says, I'm not sure on the retro stuff, because I think that takes away from the true retro stuff that we have. It would be nice if there was maybe like a little bit of variation to it, but or ultimately they bring back the retro kits as kits through Puma or something like that. But when you go in there now, there is so much more, and lots of people still, they want to see things before they buy them. They don't want to shop online. And ultimately, it is something that is going to bring more people to the club, into the club shop and spending money, which is ultimately what we need, isn't it, when we come around to it. So I think it's fantastic. I think it's everything that we need. I'm interested to see what they do with the old club shop. I know it's been mentioned that it's going to be like a casual drinks area. And then obviously D-Max sort of mentioned that the sports bar is still in plan. And I think that it's exciting, isn't it? I think that it's very clear that we're not getting a new stadium now. So all of these things need to be built in and developed so that this product that we're selling, it becomes not just about the 90 minutes on the pitch, it becomes about the hour and a half before the game and the half an hour after. So I'd just like to say congratulations to everybody involved in that club shop.
Well, we've got a busy week coming up, back on the football pitch again. Northampton Town away in the Virtue Trophy, is it now? I forget the name of it. It's always the Johnson's Paint Trophy to me. And then Stockport away later on in the week. We'll start on the Northampton game, talk about it briefly. And yeah, we'll start at Northampton. What sort of changes do we want?
I mean, for me, it's got to be quite heavily rotated because of the scheduling. We've got, you know, Stockport on Friday, which is a bit grim. So it has to be quite heavily rotated. I'm quite disappointed about Chris Conclark, who might be out of the game, because I would have thought this would have been a good opportunity for him. But I think, yeah, they'll be rotated. I think you'll see Mills play, Nevitt will play, De Havilland and Donny O'Brien Brady maybe as the two midfielders. I think, you know, you'll have Ado playing, maybe even Will Blackmore in goal as well. But I think at the same time, we do have to take this game seriously, because we know that if we get through it, there's no chance of us having, you know, Birmingham away in the next round. We'll have Walsall at home. And then if you win that, which is a game that you really think you should win, then you're in a quarter final. And all of a sudden, you know, you're starting to see the Wembley Arch in the distance again. So I think it's a game that, while we should rotate the squad, we have to take it super seriously, because promotion's not looking likely. And if we could get another Wembley trip out of this season, then at least it will be, you know, we're still going in the right direction in terms of adding more esteem and adding stuff to the trophy cabinet of this football club.
So my take on it is, it's another game, it's another competitive game, it's one we should go out to win. Yeah, I do think we should have a couple of changes here and there. If I'm honest, I'm not really sure who comes in, who goes out, but I think we need to try a couple of different things. And, you know, I think it's quite handy that it is Northampton. And I think it's an opportunity for us to get one back over them from obviously losing the other night, because I really, really despise losing to Northampton, as well as Cambridge and a couple of others. So let's go relatively strong. As Charlie says, it's another opportunity to, you know, we're getting closer to another final. I know there's a lot of people out there don't like the Mickey Mouse Trophy, is what it is. But, you know, look what happens if you get to the, you know, get to the last game. You take a nice 15,000 or however many we take, day out in London, day out at Wembley, the home of football. So why not take it seriously? And let's be honest, if we win on Tuesday, which is, I believe, a 7 o'clock kickoff, and then we'd have Walsall, come on, we should be beating the likes. Well, I say we should be beating the likes of Walsall, and then we're into the final eight. So, you know, there's quite a lot to play for. So let's take it seriously, but let's not take the piss. So, yeah, you know, I think it'll be disappointing we won't have many fans there. Nothing like the opposing 7,500 that was there on Saturday, really. So, yeah, let's get down there. Tickets are relatively cheap. And seeing the family, that's family stand, the main stand on Tuesday night.
Yeah, do you know what? I've always said that I'm quite a big fan of the Virtue Trophy, but this year I'm not so keen on it. I just think that our priorities do need to be elsewhere. And I know that we're talking about rotations. I'm not sure that the rotations that we have actually make us any weaker as such, but I think that that's just because of the level that we're at. And like we've mentioned already, is that I'm actually gutted for Chris Conclark this time. I had some choice words to say when he obviously broke his collarbone against Bristol Rovers, but to basically take a crossfield ball to the side of the head and probably end up needing to probably take a week off because of concussion protocols, it's just devastating. Because again, it's like, just when he sort of gets his chance and he gets, what was it, sort of 20 minutes on the pitch, he then takes like another two steps backward. And I'm actually frustrated about how that situation was dealt with. How a player has collapsed on the pitch at the end of the game is beyond me. Like, he should have, if that's the condition that he's in, the doctor didn't look at him. I know that obviously John Chatfield, the physio, did, but does that sort of explain where we're at with all these injuries, where we're letting a player that is ultimately concussed back onto the football pitch? I think that was pretty much bang out of order, and ultimately the collapse on the pitch could have been avoided. And more importantly, I would imagine that his girlfriend and his kids were there. I don't think any of them would have wanted to have seen him collapse on the pitch. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. So that was probably the thing that left the sour taste. And then ultimately, you've then got the thing where if he's in the changing room, he collapses in the changing room, nobody knows about it. Everybody saw that at the end of the game, and everybody's then asking questions, and it puts somebody like Fergie in a sticky situation. So definitely something that could have been avoided. But like Dale said, it would be nice just to sort of get one back over Northampton. They'll say, "Oh, it's just the Virtue Trophy. It doesn't mean anything." But you know, we beat Cambridge three times last season, didn't we? And one of those was in the BSM. So yeah, I'd hope that we go as strong as we can.
Right, we're not going to do predictions for Northampton. We are going to do them. And I should say it's Northampton at home, not Northampton away, as I may have said in the prelude to that section. But Stockport away, we are going to do predictions for, as usual. It looks a tough game to me, this one. Start of the Christmas schedule, really. So it's a busy few weeks for Posh. Stockport going well in the league, looking like promotion contenders again. Got a lot of momentum. Ash, what's your feelings towards the game?
I'm a little bit concerned. They have been strong, and they have been strong at home this season. And obviously, their star performer is fit and is ready to go. Whereas we're missing ours. So I'm not going to say that I think that we're going to lose. I'm going to go in confident as always, but it is going to be a tight game. It is going to be a difficult game, and we are definitely going to have to outscore them, that's for sure. We're not keeping a clean sheet against Stockport, that's for sure. I don't know a great deal about them, but if we're going to start sticking with the same back four, then that's what we've got to do. That's what Fergie said. It's a really difficult one, isn't it? They are flying high after last season and carrying on sort of where they left off with, similar to Mansfield and similar to Wrexham. So it would be wrong to say that we're super confident going into the game, but I'm always hopeful that we can get something from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would. They're a really good team. Louis Barry is an absolutely unbelievable player for League One level. And just generally through their team, they've got a big group of players that are all sort of 7 out of 10s. They don't really have any dodgy players in their team. They're a very good cohesive unit. I think it's going to be a really tough game. But with a tough game also provides a chance to make a statement. And I think if we were to go and get a win at Stockport, that would be a big statement win. That would definitely be a big statement win. I mean, they're a side that are going to be in and amongst the top six at the end of the season. I think a lot of people predicted they would be. They had a squad that was way too good for the division below. It's going to be a really tough game, but if we can go there and get something and go there and win, it's going to really buoy us ahead of the sort of the proper festive run of fixtures. Two home games against two sides also in and amongst the playoffs. We've got a chance now to take some points off the teams above us if we're smart, and that could start on Friday night potentially.
The thing with Stockport, what I like is years ago, there used to be that rivalry. And if some of you want to go back to when when Darragh first took over, Stockport, Darlington and Peterborough was always sort of like fighting with each other. And there were some close games. Generally, we had the better of them. And Stockport is who we beat in our first ever appearance at Wembley. So I actually like playing Stockport. Normally have a good record. But I'm looking forward to going up there. I wouldn't be surprised if we do win and we do keep a clean sheet, because that is probably the Peterborough way. So I think we should go up there, just enjoy it, see what happens, you know, go and do our best. And I haven't really got too much to say about the game, but it's, apart from I'm really disappointed it's on a Friday night. I know we've spoke about it and, you know, we can't change it, but I think if it was on a Saturday, there would have been a lot more, a bigger attendance. And I personally know quite a few people that would have gone on a Saturday, but not on a Friday. So I'm not too comfortable. I'm not too chuffed that it's been moved. But what do us fans, how do we control it? So let's just go up there, enjoy it. I think most of us, or some of us, a few of us from the pod are going. So let's go and enjoy the game.
I'm feeling quite confident, you know. I think at the moment, especially now Poku's out and Kean Hayes has come in, I think we look even better on the counter-attack than we did when Poku was fit. Kean Hayes plays very differently to Poku, where Poku would hold on to the ball, and maybe give the opposition a chance to get back because he's better at taking on the defenders. Kean Hayes just runs straight into space. So I think the teams that come at us, I think we're more likely to score. I know we've not got the best defence, so I don't agree with Dell. I can't see us keeping a clean sheet. But, I mean, if you use Saturday as an example, every time we looked like we were being dominated, we ended up scoring from it because we're so much better at getting the ball in the net after a counter-attack than we are at our build-up play at the moment. So I can see plenty of opportunities where Stockport are trying to pin us in the box and we just go up the pitch and score a goal. I think we can just do it so quickly that I can see us getting three or four away at Stockport. It's just whether we can withhold that pressure with the defence that we've got to not concede three or four. I think that will be our issue on Friday.
Okay, we're going to move on to score predictions. Ash, you first.
Yeah, look, we're definitely not pumping Stockport, but we are going to score loads of goals. I am with odds on that one. So, you know, we haven't scored five yet, but I think it's going to be 5-4. To Peterborough United. It is going to be a high scoring game. It's going to be under the lights. It's going to be a classic up north, isn't it? This could be the game where we score five goals. We were close yesterday. We just conceded too many, but I think that we'll concede some. So yeah, 5-4 for me.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I think Stockport are too good a team to, you know, this philosophy of we'll score one more than you. I'm not sure it works against Stockport. I think they're probably too good going forward. I can see a defeat. I don't know if I've done this since the first week of the season, but 3-1 Stockport.
I'm going to be positive, okay? And I'm straight at 3-0, Peterborough. I'm going to keep that clean sheet. We're going to score three goals, okay? I've not got a prediction right all season. Hopefully Friday will be my first one.
I will go for 3-2, I think, just to be a little bit different to Ashley. I think 5-4 is probably what I would have gone for, but just to be different, I'll go with 3-2.
Well, I think it would be very Peterborough United to keep a clean sheet in the game that we're really not expected to. So I'm going to go that we're going to keep a clean sheet, and I'll say that we'll win 1-0 with a Manny Fernandez goal. I think it'll be a bullet header late on in the game in front of 400 posh fans who are then going to have a very shady walk through Stockport following it. Yeah, I'm very excited. I think it's going to be a good one.
So Lodz has made another error tonight after saying all our defence could play in the Championship. And he's said 3-2, but I feel a bit like Jeff Stelling. Lodz, 3-2, but to who?
Obviously Posh. Posh are going to win 3-2.
Well, let's hope so, with Ryan de Havilland charging down that right flank from right back. We will see you all soon. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast. Do you know what? I really fucking hope De Havilland plays right back just to shut you up. It's so fucking funny, mate.